Recording. Okay, it's Monday afternoon. It is May the 11th. And Chem 12 lab lecture. We're looking at a reaction that is a tosylate reacting with sodium hydroxide in acetonitrile at 60 degrees C. The question asked by Mattias was, is this primary or secondary substrate? And the substrates, just to look at, whoa, I still can't. The iPad is not drawing. I am dead in the water, guys. That gives me no ability to draw or do anything. All right, hang on. As I try to sort out these technical difficulties, why am I not able to draw on anything? Maybe it's my pin's not connected. I know what I need to do. Okay, Apple Pencil reconnected. Ah, we're back in business. I've sorted it out. Okay. Now I can answer your question. Sorry, Mattias. That was horrible. All right.
That's okay. No worries.
Okay, so here's the deal. When we have a substrate that has a leaving group out here versus in this position and in this position.
Oh, I see the problem now.
Yeah. So yeah, one of the ways to look at this is to look at it and to see where the hydrogens are, to see where the hydrogens are connected. The other way that is the proper way to look at it is to look at the carbon that the leaving group is attached to and to ask the question, how many other carbons are additionally attached to that. So here, one other carbon, two other carbons, three other carbons. And so primary, secondary, tertiary, based on the number of carbons that are connected to the same carbon that the leaving group is on.
Right. It's kind of a follow-up question. It might be kind of a stupid one, but I've been getting confused with the nomenclature and how we use the term substrate.
Okay. Substrate is the reactant. So when I use the nomenclature substrate or the terminology substrate, the substrate is what you are doing the reaction on. So that is always your reactant. And everything else, we've got either the base or nucleophile is usually written on top of the arrow, the solvent down below, and any other conditions like temp down below that. So the substrate is always the thing that we are reacting on, that we are converting into the product. And normally when we do a chemical reaction, you know, we usually do reactants and go to products. And we usually think of A plus B goes to make C plus D. In this case, we would be taking and reacting our tosylate with sodium hydroxide and doing this in, what I do, acetonitrile? Yeah. CH3CN with 60 degrees Celsius. And then we go to make something. And so we would label these both as reactants. But in most of these reactions that we're looking at, the nucleophile or the base is a fairly small component. It doesn't have to be. It can be that that you have two large components that you are bringing together, in which case, which one is the substrate or which one is, which, then there is no real substrate. Then there's just two reactants that we're reacting together. But in most of these problems, we have a smaller incoming nucleophile or base, and then a molecule which we are effecting a transformation on. And so we're calling that the substrate.
Oh, okay, I see.
Okay?
That helps, thank you.
Cool. All right, so I'm gonna delete this. I'm gonna delete these guys. And Shelby, you were right on the money. It was the pencil that disconnected from the iPad for some reason. And so the iPad was actually technically working. It was just my pencil that the Bluetooth had disconnected, and I couldn't do anything. So that was solved by plugging the pencil back into the iPad directly and allowing it to reconnect Bluetooth-wise, and now I'm back up and running. Okay, so this is a primary substrate. And so we'll leave these up here because these are going to help us later on. We have a primary substrate and a leaving group that is a tosylate that is a really good leaving group. And so what I normally do when I start doing these problems is I normally make a list.
Hey, Jason?
Yeah.
I know you're getting question after question, but and you don't have to answer it in this problem. Maybe if we do another problem after, but how do you recognize when you get something like in the previous problem we did in class, it was a second degree alpha halo aldehyde. You know what I mean?
How do I characterize it? How do I recognize it?
Yeah, how did you recognize that it was that exact one?
There it is there. That is just recognizing this functional group. That's going to come through experience. That's going to come through what we're doing today and on Wednesday. That just showing you more of those so that you start looking for them and recognizing them. I don't have a great answer to that other than I'm just going to keep trying to point them out and showing you guys what we're doing.
So do we need to know them like pretty good right now?
You're going to start practicing them. So as I send out the practice problems and identifying the substrate in each case, yes, we're going to try to recognize them and to recognize them when we see them. And I've got some more problems this afternoon that we're going to do. We're going to try to do, I think, three or four of them.
Okay.
At least this afternoon.
Sounds good.
And don't feel bad about interrupting me. Just keep throwing out the questions.
Jason, I think some of us did this example with Linnea yesterday.
That's okay. That's actually a good thing in a little bit of redundancy. And if I may have a different way of explaining it than Linnea does and hitting a bunch of different things. And if that's the case, then I'll jump ahead in the problem set and we'll just pick up some new problems too. Okay?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let me jump back to where we are here. All right, so we're gonna do substrate. We're gonna do leaving group. We're going to do nucleophile or base. We need a solvent and a temperature. So, the substrate, this is a primary substrate. That primary substrate is picking up on this concept here that I have a leaving group that is attached to a carbon, that is only attached to one of the carbons. So that's a primary substrate. The leaving group is the tosylate. So this is my OTS. That's an abbreviation for this big group. And that name comes from the fact that this group is toluene. And so that toluene as a toluol group is where the tosylate together with sulfonate comes from. And so this, that whole name comes from that component. That group is a very good leaving group. One of the best that we have. So it's a very strong leaving group. The group up here, sodium hydroxide, nucleophile or base. Here what we need to do is make decisions based on the anion portion of that. The cations are spectator ions. And so we look at this and we ask the question, is this going to be a nucleophile or a base? Well, most of the time, when the anion is greater than or equal to hydroxide ion, we say that this is a base and that it generally functions as a base as opposed to a nucleophile. The solvent is acetonitrile, which is a molecule that is substantially polar. And so this is a polar molecule, but it's aprotic in that it can't hydrogen bond. So we have an aprotic solvent, and the temperature being at 60 degrees is a little bit hard to evaluate. But in given that the tosylate, if we go back to the idea, where did I have it? I had it in here. If we go back to this idea, and we discussed this in lecture as well, so I feel like we can move on some of these things a little bit faster, that when we get to temperature and we're trying to evaluate temperature, that that the picture that we're in right now is this picture. That was not quite highlighting the way I wanted it to. That the tosylate being a really good leaving group has a really weak string, and that anything over 25 degrees is a fairly high temperature. So we can classify this temperature as high. Okay, so now we go through and we see what all of this sort of does in terms of the magic sheet. So when we look at the magic sheet, what we can do is we can say, all right, substrate, primary substrates. Primary substrates tend to promote SN2 reactions. And so when we look at these different reactions that are on here, we're looking at increasing reaction rates, which are putting tertiaries as being reacting faster than secondaries being reacting faster than primaries. In this case, in the substitution reactions and the SN2 reactions, the primary is faster than secondary, and this is a whole lot faster than tertiary, such that tertiary doesn't even really appear on the SN2 substrate. So that's primarily telling me that this reaction should be by substrate, should be SN2. So I'm gonna go through and just hit each of these by color in the magic sheet so we kind of know what each thing is telling us. All right, let's look at leaving group and let's make the leaving group green. And we'll go down and find leaving group in our magic sheet here. So the leaving group, as I look at that, leaving group is here. And what we find is that the sulfonates that I have don't really promote any sort of reaction. That the trend is the same across all four reactions. Sulfonates are better than iodides, are better than bromides, are better than chlorides. And so I don't really have anything there that's telling me anything specific. The best that I can get out of that is that all of them are promoted sort of equally. So by substrate, I'm SN1, SN2, E1, E2, and that I have no preference in terms of substrate there for this reaction. The nucleophile or base, when we go down and look at nucleophile or base, what we find is that for SN2 reactions, we need a weaker base than hydroxide. for E2, bulky or strong base, equal to or greater than hydroxide. No anions for SN1. Hydroxide is an anion. When I look at an anion, what I'm thinking about is anion is equal to anything XY with a negative charge on it. These are my anions. That is like hydroxide or cyanide or potassium tert butoxide. All of these things contain cations and anions, and it's the anion portion that is there. We could also say things like bicarbonate, CO3 minus. These are all anions. And so when it says no anions, that knocks out SN1, and SN1 is not a possibility out of the list of things that I have here. And the E1 says any anionic base. So an E1 is still a possibility. But it looks like E2 is the strongest in terms of what could be here. So this base, we're looking at predominantly E2, and specifically the SN1 is knocked out, that SN1 can't be a possible reaction. What else did we have? We had E2, weaker base than hydroxide, doesn't really point towards SN2, although it could. And E1 is still a possibility, so we'll leave E1 in there because it's not excluded. Solvent, polar protic, or polar aprotic. Let's do solvent. And what did we just do? We did blue for the nucleophile or base. Okay, let's go and hit solvent. For solvents, what we see is that both of the two top reactions, like polar aprotic, so these bimolecular reactions, like the polar aprotic solvents, the SN1, E1, like the polar protic solvents, and ours is polar aprotic. So we're really in the SN2, E2 category with the aprotic solvents. So we'll go up and we'll catch here SN2 and E2. And then that temperature being high, what should we do color-wise? Let's do this color. Temperature being high. When I look at temperature, the high temperatures tend to promote elimination reactions over the substitution reactions. Substitution reactions generally like lower temperatures, whereas these elimination reactions generally like higher temperatures. So the higher temperature in this is going to indicate that this is going to be E1 or E2 more than substitution. So when I take all of those things combined, what I get is a mess. I find this, number one, that it just has a ton of writing on it and is fairly confusing in what it is I'm trying to say or trying to do. And we need to sort of sort through all of this junk to figure out which reaction is the right reaction and which of the hierarchy is most important. So stepping back from this for a second, there's a couple of things that I want to say and do here. Let me add a page. Most of the time, when we talk about the hierarchy, what I have said is that substrate is the most important thing. And then after substrate, the next most important is the nucleophile or the base, and the leaving group combined together. And then below that, solvent, and below that temperature. And that in ranking things, the substrate is most important. But what happens with this list is that this is not a hard and fast prioritization, that this is a prioritization that changes depending on problem and depending upon the different things going into the problem, and that there is no hard or fast prioritization that I can give you because it swaps up and changes with every problem that we do. So this is not not rigid at all, which makes it hard. The priorities change. With each problem. Okay. Now the other part of my lecture. So that's a complicated factor here. And it is very common when we start this process with the E1, E2, SN1, SN2 to have it be immensely overwhelming. And to go along with that, when medical schools look at your curriculum for admission into medical school, one of the things that they look at the most is organic chemistry. And one of the reasons, and one of the things that they want, is they want a letter of recommendation from the organic chemistry teacher. And one of the reasons that they do that is because when you go to med school, you have to handle an immense amount of information. And that information comes in fast, and they can't prioritize it in any particular way. And prioritizations change as that information comes in. Some of that information becomes more important in light of other information. And so this particular part where we look at SN1, SN2, and E1 and E2 mirrors a lot of what happens in medical school with a tremendous amount of information, prioritizations that change, and no clear way to always come up with the right answer. It's a very difficult skill set to master and to learn. And that's why medical schools want to look at this class in particular, because there's almost no other class that does this. There's no other curriculum that models this in this way. And so, so I want to acknowledge its importance. I want to acknowledge how confusing it is, and acknowledge that that it gives a lot of anxiety. And when is the light bulb going to clear? Because so many of the other topics that we've covered, when we cover them, they are at first confusing, but within a couple of days and within the next lecture, you're like, oh, okay, this is okay. Everything's okay again. I'm back and I understand this. And SN2, SN1, E1, and E2 are not like that. They're much more complicated. And this is not the most complicated material that we will study. As you go on within organic chemistry, the material does get more complicated. But what happens is, if you can get your brain around this information and you can handle this level of complexity, you can handle anything that we're going to throw at you in terms of OCHEM. It's almost like this is the litmus test. And if you can do this, you can do everything else. And you can all do this. It is just going to take a little bit more time than some of the other subject matters, and that is normal. And the anxiety that you may be feeling and the difficulty in trying to master this skill set is normal. And it just takes time, which is why I'm not continuing on in the rest of lab lecture that I would have liked to have done. I'm throwing that out the window and putting this priority in terms of practicing and giving you more information and more help in this area as we move forward in this last week. So we're going to do this today, and we're going to do this on Wednesday, both in lecture and in lab, to try to support going through and doing this. And Linnea is doing the same thing. So I just wanted to get all that said so that you understand sort of where you're sitting with this information, and that the amount of confusion that I'm about to bring to the table here is real and normal. And okay, and we're going to clear it up. It's just going to take a little bit of time to clear it up. Okay. That was my soapbox. I just wanted to make sure that I got that out there so that y'all heard that. Okay, back to this mess that we created, because we're trying to find some way to put priority on this. And how do I pick out what is most important? One of the things that is most important is the fact that I have not a good nucleophile, but really a base. And that hydroxide is that dividing level between nucleophile and base, and it can go either direction. But once I hit hydroxide, it tends more towards elimination, particularly when you amp up the temperature. That those two things together are pretty much the determining factor, the deciding factor in this chemical reaction. The high temperature with the base, when I look at these, tends to promote the E2 reaction. And it is the E2 reaction that is really jumping out in this, that is common in most of, if not every one of these. The only place that it's not showing up is it's not showing up here in the substrate as being a substrate that goes for E2. The substrate really told us that this should be an SN2 reaction. And if the substrate was of the most importance and always the most importance, then this would be an SN2 reaction. But like I said, the priorities change based on what's going into the problem. And the fact that I have hydroxide that tends to be a base and a high temperature, that trumps the other things that are in this chemical reaction. And so this reaction is primarily an E2 reaction. Why is it not an E1 reaction? When we go down and we look at E1, E1 really depends on the ionization, on the formation of the carbocations and stability of carbocations. And because this is a primary substrate in this problem, primary substrates, you know, carbocations go instability of a primary carbocation being the least stable, secondary being next stable, and tertiary being the most stable, unless that we have any sort of resonance or induction sort of effects. And so because primary is not very stable, the ability to form a carbocation under these conditions is not very good. And so the E1 reaction is thrown out for that reason. And so we really lean towards E2. So leaning towards E2, now the next thing that we need to do is copy this reaction.
Don't we also need to look at like the polyprotic hydrogen on the stereocenter?
Polyprotic hydrogen on the stereocenter. Let me first do this, E2 major and competing SN2 minor.
Just to like see if it works or something?
First off, there's no stereocenter. And without a stereocenter, we have protons that are in these locations. And with the protons in those locations, I'm not exactly sure what the question is that you're asking, Finn. Can you try to explain it again or give me a better idea of what it is you're trying to get at?
Well, it was like the idea that like you needed a polyprotic hydrogen in order to see if like the reaction that you're doing is even possible or something like that.
Oh, okay. So for an E2 reaction, you have to have a proton that is beta to your leaving group in order to be able to pull it in order to get the E2 reaction. Yes, that's true. I think I skipped over that step in that I have protons that are here that are in the beta position to my leaving group that allow me to be able to pull these with a base. T- to be able to dump electrons in to kick out the leaving group to be able to do the E2 reaction. So in doing that E2 reaction, what I'm doing is pulling one of those protons to get the double bond. And because this is a terminal double bond, there is no E or Z possible. There is the only one type of double bond that I can form from pulling that proton. And so that is the major product that comes out of this. The minor product that comes out of this is the product that is from the SN2 reaction of the hydroxyl group coming in and doing a backside attack, kicking out the group. And so the side product of the SN2 reaction is the formation of the hydroxyl group. And so Finn, I think the question that you're asking is, before even looking at an SN2, or can I do an SN2, E2, I should investigate whether or not there are protons that can be pulled in order to do the E2 reaction.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I usually wait and analyze everything else first. And then once I decide on my mechanism, I go and then try to do that mechanism. And if the mechanism seems to be impossible for one reason or another, then my minor product becomes the major product. And the one that I thought was major is not physically possible to make. So I sort of analyze it in that way as I go through and do the problem. Okay. Any other questions on that, yes, on this problem?
I have a question.
Go for it.
So earlier you were saying we determined it was E2 because it was a hydroxy group and a high temperature, but is it just a hydroxy group, or can it just be if we're leaning towards the base rather than a nucleophile? And the combination of a high temperature.
It's the fact that I have an anion that tends to function more as a base than it does a nucleophile. And there are a number of anions that do that. So when I take a look at anion and I start thinking about the anion itself, we have a dividing line that we've said or set up that is hydroxide. And the way that we talk about the hydroxide is really by the pKa of its conjugate. So when I look at the pKa of water, the pKa of water equals 15.7. And I'm using this as a dividing line, sort of, that if I happen to have a stronger base, then this will tend to function as a base. And if I have a weaker base, this will tend to function as a nucleophile. And I generally say that this is hydroxide and those things that are sort of equal to. So methoxide ion is on that border. Ethoxide ion is on that border. By the time I start to move to tert butoxide, the way that I write that in abbreviation is to write O tertiary butyl. This is an oxygen that is connected to a tertiary butyl group. That's a stronger base than hydroxide. And a stronger one than that is this LDA, lithium diisopropyl amide.
This is what we went over in lecture, right?
Yeah, so we said this in lecture. We hit this in lecture a little bit. And so how I'm making those decisions on what is going to be a stronger base or what is going to be a weaker base, we can look at the magic sheet and we can look at the pKa values on the magic sheet and we can compare them. And these are the pKa's of the conjugates. So we can compare them. In this case, this is water that is the conjugate. This would be methanol as the conjugate. This is phenol. And we're just putting on the proton on these HBr. This is cyanide, HCN, HI. All of these different conjugates that we're looking at and their pKa values. The phosphorus pKa value is actually R3P with an H and a positive charge on the phosphorus. And that's a pKa of 8.69. So what we see is that the pKas are all over the damn place because this table is not in order of pKa. This table is in order of nucleophilicity. And so if we can find an analog within the nucleophilicity and we can gauge whether it's a good or a better nucleophile, then sometimes that can help. But that dividing line, that we were looking at, hydroxyl group, is that we're saying that these things are better nucleophiles and that these things are lesser nucleophiles. But nothing on here on this sheet is really telling me about stronger base or weaker base. I mean, the pKa's are there, but really everything on here is looking at it in terms of nucleophile. So how do I understand what makes something a better base or a better nucleophile? Really, we do it by pKa. And we say that if the pKa of the conjugate, so the stronger base, if pKa of conjugate is greater than 15.7, then it tends to function as a base. If the pKa is weaker, less than 15.7, then we tend to function as a nucleophile. But it's not the entire story, it's just part of the story. And then some of these things, despite their pKa's, can only function as bases. And that's these guys. This one is LDA. This one is potassium tert butoxide. That these two tend to be what are called bulky bases. And they function as a base because of their sterics, because of their size, that these groups that are on here are just really big, bulky groups that make these things have a lot of sterics such that they don't act as nucleophiles very well because it's very hard for them to get in and bond to things. And so they tend to grab onto and pull the very small proton and function primarily as a base. And there's a lot of different things that do that. And so when we're trying to decide whether or not something is going to function as a base or whether it's going to function as a nucleophile, generally these are carbon bases. Things like N-butyl lithium or sometimes we see things like these or bulky bases. Those are things that tend to function as bases. Over here, these tend to be the smaller smaller or more polarizable or large in terms of their polarizability. And so these are things like iodide, bromide, or things that are soft, like acetate. It's those types of things. Okay, Eric, you had a question. Excluding sterics, what causes these molecules to prefer to pull the beta hydrogen off in an E2 rather than form a bond in an SN2?
Mind if I elaborate a little bit?
Please.
So my question is that you have a nucleophile that can also behave as a base in an SN2 or an E2 reaction. And my question is, does it behave as one of the other because of the accessibility of that beta hydrogen? Or is it kind of like a kinetic component where the likelihood that the reactant hits the substrate where it needs to for an SN2 versus hitting the substrate necessary for an E2 reaction causes kind of like a kinetic imbalance?
Let me do it this way. I think I understand your question.
Okay.
But I think the way that I want to answer that question is to look at it this way. We have an E2 reaction and we have a competing SN2 reaction. And what we can do is we can look at the substrate for the molecule, which is the same substrate for both, right? It's the tosylate. And that for this substrate, for the reaction to take place, I have an activation energy barrier that takes me towards the double bond or the E2 product. So what we can say is that this is my E2 product that is coming out of this, and this is my activation energy that is for my E2 and the transition state for the E2. And that for the SN2, that what is happening, and I've probably made this bigger than I wanted to do, but for the SN2, what's happening is such a horrible drawing. I apologize. I'm usually way better than this. For the SN2, what's happening here is that this is the activation energy for the SN2 reaction and the transition state for the SN2 reaction, in that while I have low sterics around the primary center, it is the combination of the hydroxyl group being down here and the fact that I am forming water versus over here, and also the OTS coming off as a leaving group. And over here, I have formed this plus OTS as my leaving group. And so I guess the sodium ion also has to sort of be in here as the counter ion for everything. And so I'm adding up all of the reactants and all of the products and looking at the energy of everything, and that hydroxide being fairly small, fairly hard, tends to function more as a base than it does a nucleophile in pulling the proton, particularly with the high temperature, that the high temperature tends to promote eliminations as opposed to substitutions based on a thermodynamic argument? I think it's an entropy argument when it looks at the number of things that I'm creating entropy-wise in the elimination, in that as I put temperature and energy into that, I have three things going to four. So the three things going to four, I have hydroxide, sodium, the substrate going to water, the elimination product, the tosylate, and the sodium. So I have four things that I've created from three things, which is an increase in entropy. Whereas in the substitution reaction, winds up giving me three things. The entropy is essentially unchanged within the SN2 reaction. It's an entropy argument. It's not an easy argument to make, but higher temperatures tend to promote elimination reactions because of the entropy change that winds up happening. And hydroxide in particular is a strong enough base, is reactive enough in a base sense that reaction becomes more favorable. This is not the easiest of reactions to talk about base versus nucleophile because I've got a primary substrate. And if I had something that had a secondary substrate or tertiary substrate where clearly the activation energy is dramatically lowered for pulling the proton because of the stability of the double bond that is formed, it would be an easier argument to make. Here, the stability of the double bond is not that great. And so the question is, well, why is this so low when primary substrates are generally very low in activation energy for the SN2 reaction? And I don't have a good answer for that other than the fact that it's a high heat reaction and that we have something that tends to function more as a strong base. I know that doesn't entirely answer your question, Eric, but I think it goes some way into trying to answer that. And so we get the two different products that come out of this. Let me try going on to another problem. And let's see if in this one has a substitution versus elimination as well. So let's try this one.
Wait, but which product do you see more of, even though the E2 is major?
Well, if the E2 is major, then it's the E2.
Okay, all right. I was just looking at like how you said that the EZ was not possible.
Right, so there's no EZ possible. That's true, because EZ means that you would have to have at least a disubstituted double bond, and here we only have a monosubstituted. So the monosubstituted nature of it means that I'm only getting one double bond. That doesn't tend to affect the major versus the minor.
Got it.
Okay. Let's see. I don't know how far into these Linnea went.
You kind of just skipped around.
Did you? Okay. Then I'm just going to go straight through, because that's harder to predict then. And each one of these problems is designed with showing you something a little different. I don't know why that's not looking the way I want. There we go, stereocenter in there. And sodium methoxide, OCH3 in methanol, with 25 degrees C. Okay, let's do the same thing. Substrate, what is it? Primary, secondary, or tertiary?
Secondary.
So primary.
Yeah, so remember the way that we looked at this. This is the carbon that the leaving group is attached to, and that is attached to only one other carbon. So that's what makes this a primary substrate. The leaving group is going to be a chloride. The nucleophile or base, as listed, is methoxide ion. The solvent is methanol. And is that polar protic or polar aprotic?
Polar protic.
Protic, good. And then temp equals 25 degrees C. Okay, so let's classify each thing. Leaving group. The leaving group, when I go back to the magic sheet, leaving groups go in order of sulfonates, iodides, bromides, chlorides, with chlorides being the lowest. There are worse leaving groups than chlorides. Chloride is an okay leaving group. It's just not a great leaving group. So we would put this leaving group as an okay leaving group. Not a great one. The nucleophile or base. This is approximately equal to hydroxide ion. Methoxide, ethoxide, hydroxide, they're all about the same. So that tends to function more as a base than it does a nucleophile. The solvent being protic. Protic solvents, when we come up here and we look at the magic sheet, protic solvents tend to promote SN1 and E1 reactions. So these are ionizing solvents, ethanol, methanol, aqueous ethanol, water, acetic acid, formic acid. All of these protic solvents tend to promote ionization. And some of these solvents you're not quite familiar with, acetic acid, formic acid, trifluoroacetic acid, again, I'm not getting them quite the way that I want. I'm going to try one more time and do this a little bit differently. Let's take acetic acid, formic acid has only one carbon, so that's got a hydrogen there. Trifluoroacetic acid. And then, oh no, that was trifluoroethanol. We just need to get rid of that. So that's the two carbons with the trifluoro group on it. And then the trifluoroacetic acid. So there's those solvents. Those are all ionizing solvents that promote carbocation formation. And so what we have here in a protic solvent is a solvent that promotes ionization. And then the temperature, what we are trying to do is we are trying to link the temperature to the leaving group. In that, in this case, what I have is an OK leaving group and a temperature that is right around room temperature. That room temperature nature of this makes this temperature fairly low for a chloride leaving group. So we would say that this temperature is fairly low and that's relative to OK leaving group. And so when I look at all these things, primary substrates tend to lean towards SN2 reactions more than SN1, E1, or E2. The leaving group doesn't tell us a whole bunch. The base tends to tell us that this is either an E2 or an E1, that sort of, if we're in a base, then we're in an elimination sense. The polar protic solvent is telling me that this reaction has the capability to go either SN1 or E1 in terms of ionization. So we're looking at the ability to form carbocation formation. And then my temperature being low usually likes to go for substitution. So these tend to promote SN1 and SN2 reactions as being low temperature. And again, what I've got is a whole bunch of complexity and not a whole lot of confidence that I've made any good assessments here. So what can we exclude? What can we throw out? When we go back to the magic sheet and we look at what these different reactions require, now, I'm going to bring the magic sheet in again because I'm feeling like each time I don't want to write over other notes that we've already made. All right, so we've got a new magic sheet in here down at the bottom. Good. So when I look at the fact that, what color did I make it? The nucleophile. When I look at my nucleophile or base as being the methoxide ion, that's an anion. And when I go down and I look what it says down here, it says no anions for SN1 reactions. And I have an anion in terms of my nucleophile or base. And so what that really tells me is that SN1 is off the table in that I can't have an SN1 reaction in this because it says no anions. And it says it with an exclamation mark. It's being really clear that I can't have an anion in the presence and do an SN1 reaction. That's not always true. But as far as things that I'm going to give you, I'm going to be very consistent with that because it's so rare that you see it that that I'm going to follow that sort of as a rule. Taking SN1 off the table, when we go back to the reaction back here, oh, crap. Okay. I don't know if you guys saw that note flash across my screen. Looks like my wife has a flat tire and I may need to go rescue her. Since we're down to two vehicles and that's where we're at. And it's 3:36, 4 o'clock.
I was getting kind of hungry anyways.
I'm sorry, guys. Let's do this.
Okay. I have a quick question about the leaving group. That can be anything, right? That could be SN1, SN2, E2, or E1?
Yeah, absolutely. The leaving group doesn't normally set you in, but sometimes the leaving group can set you in. I'm going to have to show you some examples where it can. Let's do this. I pretty much did this lecture this morning. If you want to take a little bit more time, and I already posted it. So the morning's lab lecture where I went through these problems is already online. And I already did this problem. If you want to, this would be a good time. If you still have some energy and you want to watch it, you can click over and you can watch the video and zoom into the middle of the video where I already did this problem and one more after this. And then on Wednesday, we will pick it up and we'll just have an open session and we'll do more of these, okay? But I think I'm going to call it quits and go rescue my wife.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks. Sorry about that. I appreciate the understanding. And like I said, if you've got energy, go watch that video from this morning. It's already up. It's already posted and ready to go for you. And you can pick it up right with these problems and catch their questions. And if not, I will have office hours tomorrow. You're welcome to jump into those. And Wednesday, we're just going to pick up and do more of these. And we're going to just try and do them a little bit faster and get through a whole bunch of them. Okay?
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Sorry about that. We'll pick it up later. Okay.
All right.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.